Welcome once again to our program, Interpreting the Bible Through the Ages. We're in that section called The Quest for the Historical Jesus. Our guest today, as usual, is Ron Eldred, who is a teacher of world history, United States history, and apologetics at John Paul II Catholic High. And I'm your host, Monsignor Larry Moran, Pastor Emeritus of St. Patrick Catholic Church at 19th and Poplar, where the Shamrock enters the streets. Ron, welcome again. We've talked we're up to 39 series here. We've been talking about modernism, which Pope Pius X, the first part of the century, 1900s, made such a clarification and stand against. We've been talking about the new theology, some of the new theologians. And we've been talking about Albert Schweitzer, who was sort of towards the end of the first section about the quest for the historical Jesus. So didn't we say in an earlier session that Herman Samuel Ramirez launched the historical critical debate over the Jesus of history and the Christ of faith? As it's kind of telescoped to a little phrase, Jesus of history and the Christ of faith in the early 18th century?
Yes, we did. So we won't go over that story, you know, in any detail again, but I think it'd be kind of useful to summarize a little bit the first quest for the historical Jesus to remind our listeners, you know, where we've been and then where we're headed. Ramirez was born in 1694 and was a professor of Oriental languages at Hamburg until his death in 1768. And because he knew that his views on the Bible were so controversial, he was a Catholic, he never published them during his lifetime, and his ideas were not made public until after his death when the German philosopher Gotthold Ephraim Lessing published them in fragments from 1774 to 1778, in other words, toward the end of the century. And by then, Ramirez, of course, was dead. I had to take that back a little bit. I'm not sure. He might have been a Lutheran. I'd have to verify that. But whatever. Okay. The most important fragment was the seventh one, published in 1778, entitled in English, quote, On the Intention of Jesus and His Disciples. Sometimes it's translated from the German, The Goal of Jesus and His Disciples. And one scholar has said that this truly was a fragment which started the quest for the historical Jesus. In this work, Ramirez contrasted Jesus as he thought he actually was and what his disciples proclaimed him to be. N.T. Wright, a noted Protestant scripture scholar and an Anglican bishop, has summarized Ramirez's views as follows. I'll quote from N.T. Wright. Quote, Jesus was a Jewish reformer who became increasingly fanatical and politicized, and he failed. See, what he's doing here, he's kind of summarizing Ramirez's philosophy and theology. His cry of dereliction on the cross signaled the end of his expectations that his God would act to support him. The disciples fell back on a different model of messiahship, announcing that he had been raised and waited for their God to bring the end of the world. They too were disappointed, but instead of crying out in despair, they founded the early Catholic Church, which to Ramirez may have looked like much the same thing, end of quote. Again, this is a quote from N.T. Wright, who is a still is an Anglican bishop. I think he's kind of retired now and spending more time on his research, but he's a very, very prominent Protestant scripture scholar and theologian.
So obviously Ramirez's idea was a far, far cry from what we believe as Catholics about Jesus.
Yeah, and even N.T. Wright, and although he's an Anglican, you would find that a lot of his views are, you know, very traditional from a Christian point of view.
You mean N.T. Wright?
Yes.
But not certainly Ramirez.
Oh, certainly not Ramirez.
No. Okay.
Supporting this opinion of Ramirez's work, one scholar has said that, quote, Jesus was a revolutionary who tried and failed. Again, he's saying what he thinks Ramirez was saying. Mm-hmm. The disciples were deceivers who propagated a view of Jesus they knew to be false. Ramirez, in his mind, had unearthed a historical Jesus antithetical to the Christ of faith. And he hoped it would be the demise of Christianity as he knew it, end of quote. That's kind of a theme of almost all these biblical scholars. The liberals in the 19th century, the rationalists in the 18th century, the modernists toward the Catholic modernists towards the end of the 19th century and the early 20th century, and a lot of other biblical scholars since then, has been to do, and going all the way back to Spinoza, I guess, is to try to tear the Gospels apart and then build on the ruins, you know, your own religion.
Sort of a humanistically rooted religion, leaving the supernatural out.
Leaving the supernatural out, yes. All of them, I think, are far wide of the mark of whom the real Jesus was and is. He has been portrayed as a revolutionary, as an itinerant cynic, an eschatological dreamer, a magician, and a dozen other ways over the past 300 years. And most of the books found in bookstores and most of the programs on TV and in magazines portray Jesus in one or the other of these ways. And a few of them have considered him the Son of God who redeemed the world by his suffering, death, and resurrection. And we'll examine some of these interpretations in later sessions of this series. But one of the things that, one of the reasons we are having this series is to alert people to that there's a lot of TV programs and there's lots of books. In fact, maybe the great majority of books that you see in the bookstores or can buy off the internet that are supposedly about Jesus are mostly of the kind that we're talking about here. They're not, they certainly aren't of the, what we, you know, think of the true Jesus, the real Jesus.
And one of the things the Holy Father, Pope Benedict XVI, has reaffirmed for us, because he's quite a scripture scholar himself, said that the historical Jesus and the Christ of faith are the same person, and that we can't divide them and pretend that they're two different realities.
In fact, I came across an article that he wrote way back in 1967 where he said the same thing.
Really?
So he's been going on now a lot of years, you know, 40 years at least, you know, and hasn't changed his view. In fact, he's become confirmed more and more in his view that the Jesus that we read about in the Gospels is the real Jesus.
Well, and as you have been teaching us so well, I think, for almost the past 300 years, these particularly German biblical scholars who had such an influence have been trying to say the historical Jesus and the Christ of faith are two different people, and that it's just a hoax if we want to believe the Jesus of the gospel.
In fact, almost every person we've looked at, every scholar we've looked at, takes the view that at least these radical ones and, you know, liberal ones we're looking at, takes the view that the Christ of faith was something that was created later on by another generation of Christians who were not witnesses, were not eyewitnesses to the events. And that includes, of course, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, because they don't believe that the Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John that we know were the ones who actually wrote it. And, of course, obviously, this left a time for myths and other things to emerge, and so they believe that these later-day Christians were just simply sort of fabricating their own Christian religion, and it wasn't really the true Jesus at all. In other words, there are all kinds of layers on the real Jesus.
And they were trying to peel away layers of the onion to get back to the real Jesus.
Or peel off layers of the painting that's been touched up many times.
That's a good example.
Hans Kuhn was the one that first used that analogy that I believe, if I recall right.
Okay, it's a beautiful image because everybody knows that some of the great paintings, like let's say in the Sistine Chapel and the like, were painted over. Mm-hmm. And when they got down to the original, it was so much more brilliant and beautiful than what had been painted over. But what the Holy Father has been telling us is that it hasn't been painted over, and that the Christ that we know by faith is the true historical Jesus. Is that exactly what we're trying to defend?
Yes, that's exactly.
Well, Ron, you said a while ago that it was Albert Schweitzer, the famous Albert Schweitzer, the famous concert pianist and scripture scholar and doctor who went to Africa, he ended the first or the original quest for the historical Jesus. Didn't he write a book, A Quest for the Historical Jesus?
Yes.
You've said a few things, but maybe a little more detail.
Schweitzer, I remember him because he was still living when I was in high school. So I used to, you know, read quite a bit about him in the news. And not only that, you mentioned he was a noted musician, and I had quite a few LP records of his.
Really?
Where he was playing the organ. He was a world-renowned organist and a specialist on Bach.
Wow.
Schweitzer, he lived from 1875 to 1965, so by that time I'd been 10 years out of high school when he died. In fact, I was married by that time and starting a family and finishing up beginning graduate school at the University of Illinois in that year. But he was a German theologian, musician, philosopher, and physician, as you also mentioned, or a medical doctor. In his The Quest of the Historical Jesus, he challenged both the current secular interpretation of Jesus used by biblical scholars employing the historical critical method, which tended to be very rationalistic at the time, as well as the traditional Christian view of Jesus. That is, you know, the real Jesus and the Christ of faith being one and the same person.
He challenged that.
Yes. In this book, Schweitzer discussed all prior work on the question of the historical Jesus from the late 18th century to his time. You can still buy that book. I have a copy of it at home. And he does a very good job, you know, telling about the history of how the Bible's been interpreted all through that period of time associated with this quest for the historical Jesus.
He must have been a very gifted person.
Oh, yes. There's no doubt that he was, yes. He pointed out how Jesus's image had changed with the times and with the personal prejudices of the various authors. And as an alternative interpretation, he depicted Jesus as an eschatological figure who, I'll quote from him, who expected and predicted the imminent end of the world, end of quote. And we'll come back to that idea in just a little bit.
That word eschatological comes up quite a bit, and it just means end times.
Yes, end of times, and or the, you know, the end things, you know, death and
judgment
and heaven, hell, you know. Sometimes people throw purgatory in there too, although that will end, of course, and so it's not one of the final things. Well, Schweitzer is also known as a humanitarian. In fact, that's what I mostly knew him for when I was a kid. He received the 1952 Nobel Peace Prize in 1953 for his philosophy of reverence for life. And it'd be interesting to see what his views would be about abortion today if he were still alive, but I suspect he wouldn't look very favorably toward it. Best known philanthropic work was the founding and sustaining of the Albert Schweitzer Hospital, which was, or it still is, I guess, probably in the country, what they call today, Gabon, in West Central Africa. And he spent at least 50 years of his life as a missionary doctor in Africa. He's also known, as we mentioned a while ago, as a music scholar and organist. And as I said, I have several of his performances on the old LP records. And I, as I said, I very clearly remember him as a young man. Norman Geisler, who is a prominent Protestant theologian who has taught theology, philosophy, and apologetics on the college and graduate level for at least 50 years, he sums up Schweitzer nicely when he wrote, quote, "He argued that Jesus' message was eschatological in nature and that the supposedly objective research into the man had produced a figure molded into the biases of the researchers." Then he quotes Schweitzer as saying, now this is, he's quoting Schweitzer now, "There is nothing more negative than the result of the critical study of the life of Jesus. He is a figure designed by rationalism, endowed with a life by liberalism, and clothed by modern theology and historical garb."
Boy, that's a pretty strong statement. Albert Schweitzer, this great noted Protestant missionary, spent 50 years building a hospital in West Central Africa, is really concluding that we really don't know much about the real historical Jesus.
Yes, I think we could say that, yes.
Okay.
I don't think he really was a Christian, but we'll get to that later.
Well, is it true that Swyson not only ended the first quest for the historical Jesus, but he also started a new direction in historical Jesus studies himself?
Yes. He declared that the original quest had produced no valuable results. And he argued that the liberal lives of Jesus of the 19th century were, and I'll quote from him, were simply reflections of those who sought the historical Jesus, end of quote. And to put it another way, in my own words, the lives of Jesus sounded more like the biographies of the authors themselves than the life of Jesus. In other words, they projected their own desires and their own, you know, personalities and this, that, and the other into Jesus. And, you know, this we call this in another series we put on called Understanding the Bible, the word eisegesis, which, of course, is projecting the present into the past rather than exegesis, which, of course, is trying to discover the meaning of what the original authors meant rather than imposing your own meaning on the Bible. Schweitzer started things in a new direction by emphasizing the eschatological dimensions of Jesus' words and actions. And in other words, as one scholar has said, and I'll quote from him, Schweitzer felt that the key to understanding Jesus was his eschatology, end of quote. And then I'm quoting again, Jesus could not be divorced from the eschatological context which he shared with the Judaism of his day and be understood in any reasonable fashion, end of quote. And eschatology is defined as the branch of systematic theology that treats of the last things, death, particular and general judgment, heaven, hell, and purgatory, as we said a while ago. And it has been a major theme in historical Jesus literature ever since Schweitzer introduced that idea. In this regard, Schweitzer writes that, quote, the many modern versions of Christianity deliberately ignore the urgency of the message that Jesus originally promised for an immediate world end that was so powerfully proclaimed in his first century theology, end of quote. Obviously, anyone who takes such a view of Jesus, Jesus' ignorance of the end times, does not believe that he's a divine person. And I don't think Schweitzer was a Christian in the traditional sense, and did believe that Jesus was a divine person. And I think he was probably more of a secular humanitarian than he was a Christian humanitarian.
So you're concluding that Schweitzer did not believe in Jesus as truly God and truly man.
I think that's true. I've never read anything that would make me think otherwise.
Okay.
His view of Jesus is an extreme form of apocalypticism, as one person has said, which he believed Jesus held. But N.T. Wright summarizes Schweitzer's thesis, I think, very well when he writes, quote, Jesus, that is, believed himself to be the Messiah, while the onlookers thought he might be Elijah. He confidently expected that his God would step in and bring the world to an end during the course of his ministry. He dreamed the impossible dream of the kingdom, bringing about the end of world history. When this did not happen, and the great will of history refused to turn, he threw himself upon it, was crushed in the process, but succeeded in turning it nonetheless. He thus took upon himself the great affliction which was to break upon Israel and the world. The bridge between his historical life and Christianity is formed by his personality. He towers over history and calls people to follow him in changing the world. The very failure of his hopes set them free from Jewish shackles to become in their new guise the hope of the world, end of quote. In other words, Wright is sort of summarizing
obviously, Schweitzer doesn't believe in the resurrection.
Yes.
Okay.
One source has written that, quote, only those few literate leaders then in power could be aware of the critical unfulfilled first century promise indivisible from the original theology of Jesus. Schweitzer observes that the early church leaders introduced a modified theology. Once the prompt return of Jesus failed to occur, Obviously, the early leaders would surely lose power in their employment if they failed to modify the original theology, which, of course, explains why, you know, that the later generation modified the story to make Jesus some kind of a divine, you know, healer and all that kind of thing. To put it another way, although the Jesus of history had failed, his later disciples concocted a totally new story in the Gospels to protect their own privileged position in the church and in society. This is basically, I think, in a nutshell, Schweitzer's view, and it's a view that's been picked up by quite a few other scripture scholars since then, this eschatological theme. And of course, obviously, Jesus failed because the end time didn't come during his lifetime, and so he was wrong about that. So because of that, his followers later on had to concoct some kind of cock and bull story, you know, about
the resurrection.
Yes, about the resurrection and his divinity.
Sure.
And to conclude our discussion of Schweitzer, one scholar has said, quote, he halted the old quest so severely that it would not continue for another 50 years. And he also set the stage for the third quest, which would not start until 75 years after his writing and 15 years after his death in 1965, which you can see that's kind of beginning to bring us down close to our own time.
Getting closer to home. Well, let's talk about this interim period. I believe you said it was 1906 to 1953, first half of the 20th century, the no-quest period. They gave up questing for the historical Jesus. You want to say something about that and start a discussion on that?
Yeah, it's like the scholar said a while ago, for perhaps at least another 50 years before. Schweitzer was writing, you know, earlier in the 20th century, and so you don't get anyone really picking up on this theme until about 1953, and there's a reason 53 is selected, as we'll see later on as we get discussing that. But that still is not the beginning yet of the third quest, or the second quest, and the second quest was a very short period. And it'll take us about a half a session to go through the second quest. It's the third quest that we're in right now. That's one that's going to take, and having the most influence on biblical scholarship today, that we're going to be looking at for, you know, several sessions.
Well, now, this interim quest, or this 1906 to 1953, is the second period of the no quest period, or I'm a little confused about that.
Well, I was quoting one scholar as saying Schweitzer halted the old quest so severely that it would not continue for another 50 years, that he also set the stage for the third quest, which would not start until 75 years. And the period that immediately followed the publication of Schweitzer's The Quest for the Historical Jesus was an interim period, or as you said a while ago, sometimes it's been called a no-quest period, you know, from the study of the historical Jesus. Another scholar has said of the matter that, quote, Schweitzer had so effectively critiqued the old quest concerning its universalizing tendencies and lack of apocalyptic vision, the scholarly pursuit of the historical Jesus was halted. Historical criticism was the major feature of this period, and its epitome is found in Rudolf Bultmann. That's who we're heading for now.
Okay. A name that is probably familiar to many people, a very prominent German Protestant theologian.
Yeah, probably the most famous or infamous, however you want to look at it, of scripture scholars in the 20th century. Norman Geisler, whom we quoted a while ago, a prominent Protestant theologian and scripture scholar, has said that, quote, Schweitzer severely damaged the confidence of the quest for the historical and inaugurated a time during which such research was in disrepute. Rudolf Bultmann regarded such work as methodologically impossible and theologically illegitimate.
So Rudolf Bultmann took up what Schweitzer was saying, that we really can't find the historical Jesus.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, now, who was around this Rudolf Bultmann that his name keeps coming up from the German theologians and scripture scholars?
Rudolf Karl Bultmann was his full name, and he was a German theologian, a New Testament scripture scholar of Lutheran background, who lived from 1884 to 1976. He attended the University of Marburg, where he studied philosophy and theology, and he continued his studies at Tübingen and Berlin universities. After teaching at other universities, in addition to these, he returned to Marburg for the remainder of his career. He is most famous for his contribution to form criticism, which is outlined in detail in his work entitled, in English, The History of the Synoptic Tradition. He published that in 1921. It's really quite a famous book in biblical scholarship. Bultmann contributed to this interim period between the quest for the historical Jesus by focusing on the history of the early church and not so much on the life of Jesus, because he didn't think there was too much he could find out about the life of Jesus. He pretty much agreed with Schweitzer.
Okay. Well, what is the meaning of this, quote, form criticism that you mentioned?
In a detailed study of the Synoptic Gospels, Bultmann used the method of form criticism, which had been outlined by Johannes Weiss, that's in German would be W-E-I-S-S, the W E has the E-I, when you have an E before the I, it has an I sound, who was instrumental in the development of New Testament biblical criticism. John Macquarie, who was a Scottish-born theologian and philosopher, said to be unquestionably Anglican's most distinguished systematic theologian in the second half of the 20th century. And he wrote in a handbook of Christian theologians that Weiss also developed form criticism and its application to the New Testament, a theme that Rudolf Bultmann expanded upon Macquarie. Macquarie maintains that, quote, this method enabled Weiss to conclude that 1 Corinthians is a collection of excerpts from letters by the Apostle Paul and not a single letter in its own right. And Weiss is particularly notable for giving the name Q to the hypothetical sayings source used by the authors of the Gospel of Matthew and the Gospel of Luke.
We've got about 1 and 45 minutes left. Can you kind of summarize where we're going to end up?
Well, according to Macquarie, using this method, Bultmann analyzed the Gospel narratives into units, which could be classified according to their forms, such as aphorisms, which are short, concise, and instructive sayings, miracle stories, and other genres. He believed that these genres were formulated in the early Christian community to meet its devotional and apologetic needs, and later the community strung them together like beads on a thread to make up the Synoptic Gospels. This is Bultmann's way of saying things. Macquarie says that, quote, if this point of view is correct, it follows that the Synoptic Gospels give us information about the early church community and its beliefs, rather than about Jesus himself, and that their value as biographies of Jesus is negligible, end of quote.
Okay, well, we'll take up the next round on a little more detail about Bultmann, but it leaves us with that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John don't have very much to tell us about the real historical Jesus. To our audience, may God bless you all, always, and in all ways.